Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record Program number 661, Walking the Snake in the Middle East, Part 2, O.J. Agonistes and Palestinian Pornography. This program is being recorded on January 25th of the year 2009. I'm going to plunge right into the main subject material. Please use the description to this program and the other vast amount of information that is available at spitfirelist.com. In this broadcast, we're going to take a look not only at skewed coverage of the Middle East conflict, but we're going to be comparing that to an extent to the skewed coverage of the O.J. Simpson case, hence the title O.J. Agonistes. And we're also going to be talking about television and media control. And one of the things that's quite remarkable about, well, one is tempted to say the recently concluded most recent chapter in the Middle Eastern warfare, but there's no guarantee that this episode has been concluded, but at least temporarily paused episode in the Middle Eastern warfare, is the actual use of skewed media as a strategic weapon in order to affect battlefield advantage. Very, very intelligent, and I don't know if it's ever been done before, but it's quite remarkable and quite innovative on the part of Hamas and the Palestinians and their underground Reich and Arab backers. And we're going to be taking a long look in this program. Well, maybe not as long as I'd like, but we're going to be taking a jaundiced look. And I mean a jaundiced look at one of the things I hate most, which is television. And a lot of the distortion that we've been seeing has to do with that bloody medium. Reading, by the way, is really good for your brain. It strengthens the brain as well as informing you. It's a good way to ward off Alzheimer's or to delay it. What I used to say on my long 3-hour Sunday night talk show, as I used to say, read or bleed, learn or burn. If you don't study history, the world is a mystery. So if you want us to keep watching the idiot box, well, your brain is going to disintegrate and you're going to wind up knowing nothing. And ultimately, that is going to cost you. We're going to take a look at some of the media coverage, TV coverage in particular, the Middle Eastern war. This against the background of Serpent's Walk, as I discoursed in Sod 1 and in For the Record 660. San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, January 7th of 2009 had a story by Matthew Kalman of the Chronicle Foreign Services. Gaza school attack could be a trigger for Israeli pullout. Killing of 30 Palestinian refugees inside UN campus invites escalation of outrage. And what this article is talking about is the shelling of a UN school in Gaza Strip. And what they're talking about is the fact that incidents like that also, alleged Israeli tank fire, which killed a couple of UN workers, a couple of aid workers in a UN truck stopped at a checkpoint, those types of incidents have had a significant effect on the course of battlefield events and an even more profound effect on the propaganda/psy war impact of this particular conflict. And again, one of the things that's central here is television. With television, all you have is an image. Reading, on the other hand, which strengthens the brain, permits the simultaneous integration of concepts. So, again, from Dave Emery, from the heart as well as from the head, turn off the TV, burn it, blow it up, don't hurt anybody else, but get rid of your flipping TV. Start reading, lose the one-eyed monster. Skipping into this story, and again, this part of the story reads, until now, the international community, including Egypt, has given Israel a long leash to strike a heavy blow against Hamas. But with the shelling of the UN school in the northern Gazan town of Jabalia on Tuesday, the clock might start ticking for Israel to withdraw its troops. Now, one of the things that's interesting about these incidents, and also about the inflammatory rhetoric comparing the Israelis with the Nazis and things which other things which are completely inappropriate. By the way, aside from the distortion of what actually has been taking place on the ground in the Middle East, if you want to compare the Israelis to the Nazis, you ought to find out what the Nazis actually did. And by way of comparison, one brigade of the Leibstandarte Adolf Hitler, the 1st Waffen-SS Division. One brigade, a brigade can be anywhere, maybe 3,000, give or take 1,000 troops. It depends very much on the army. But one brigade of the 1st Waffen-SS Division burned 200 villages in the former Soviet Union with the people locked in the buildings. That brigade was commanded by Colonel General Jochen Peiper, and it earned it the name of the Blowtorch Brigade. That's 200, just one brigade burned 200 villages with the people people locked in the building. So the comparisons, aside from the actual realities on the ground, are completely ridiculous. But again, opinions are being deliberately inflamed. Now, about the UN shooting, shelling of this school, initial, and this quoting the Israeli Foreign Ministry, the initial investigations indicate that Hamas terrorists fired mortar bombs from the area of the school towards Israeli forces, who returned fire towards the source of the shooting. The Israeli return fire landed outside the school, yet a series of explosions followed, indicating the probable presence of munitions and explosives in the building, unquote. The Israeli army also accused Hamas of cynically using civilians as human shields. Intelligence reports indicated the dead included Imad Abu Askar and Hassan Abu Askar, two known Hamas mortar crewmen, unquote, the foreign ministry said in a statement. Two neighborhood residents who spoke on condition of anonymity because they feared for their safety confirmed the Israeli account, telling the Associated Press that a group of militants fired mortar rounds from a street near the school, then fled into a crowd of people in the streets. But such justification might not be enough to silence the growing chorus of international disapproval as civilian deaths rise. And at this point, it's pretty well established that Hamas has been deliberately positioning military combatants in civilian milieu, plural, specifically in order to draw retaliatory fire, which then creates civilian collateral damage, which then makes for wonderful TV footage, and people can go off to the races. Note also that Hamas is controlling what's going on the ground, and one of the things that'll be in the description for this program are some links to some footage of how Hamas handles political dissidents. Also in the Ethan Bronner piece that I read in Side 1, there's a brief section of it in which one of his Palestinian colleagues who witnessed a Fatah fighter executed, basically shot in the head at point-blank range right in front of her, and the Hamas gunman who did it then turns and said, "You're not going to write about this, are you?" And she said, "Yes, I am." There are going to be links to several elements of video footage of Hamas executing large numbers of Fatah people when they took over the Gaza Strip in June of 2007. There was not the same degree of international outrage. It would appear, frankly, that when all is said and done, anti-Semitism really does have an awful lot to do with what's going on. But again, I share Ethan Bronner's real hesitation and just wincing at dealing with the whole subject. But fact of the matter is, when Hamas slaughters Palestinians, it's not an outrage. But when they draw fire, or as in some cases, deliberately fake information, then it's the cause for much breastfeeding and rending of hair and all kinds of stuff. Skipping down to the same article, there's a very interesting element of analysis about the role of these media events in the actual course of the combat. Skipping down, quote, "A ground invasion was expected and in some Hamas quarters hoped for," said the International Crisis Group, a Brussels-based organization engaged in conflict resolution, in a paper published this week. Again, quoting, "The Islamist movement hopes to reap political benefit from material losses. It knows it is no military match for Israel, but it can claim victory by withstanding the unprecedented onslaught." Shlomo Brom, the former head of the Strategic Planning Division of the Israeli Army, said minimizing civilian casualties requires a combination of excellent intelligence, very accurate weapon systems, and very good planning that takes into account collateral damage. Mistakes are bound to happen, and they will happen in this war, unquote. Gerald Steinberg, professor of political science at Bar-Ilan University in Ramat Gan, said the strike against the UN school and the ensuing diplomatic pressure it could create were not only foreseen, but discussed in advance by Israeli policymakers. Note the following sections. Very, very interesting. Quote, "There were many meetings on how to deal with this before the fighting started. It happens every time. The effect this time very much depends on how the story plays out in the next 24 hours, said Steinberg. Again, quoting, "If organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch give this issue much greater visibility as they have in the past, the pressure on Israel will build and it will have some impact. But if it's strictly Palestinian claims, it won't have much effect," unquote. But international pressure is mounting. This is very interesting because not only were the Israeli forces taking this into account, but it is worth noting that when the inevitable collateral damage does take place, if, in fact, it generates international outrage, then that becomes a vehicle for the Israelis not pursuing the war aims to their fullest. And I would note that The ceasefire did, in fact, get implemented. And now Hamas is claiming victory because they weren't wiped out. And Hamas certainly, we'll talk about this later in this side, has achieved a tremendous amount of good PR, particularly in the Arab street. So politically and psychologically, they could be described as victors, although it remains to be seen how much appetite the Palestinian residents of Gaza have for continued warfare. Interesting article appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, January 10th of 2009. This is an article by Carla Marinucci, and it's called Conflict in the Middle East, at War in Gaza, Israel Losing PR Battle in the U.S. That reads in part, as war rages between Israel and Hamas in Gaza and President-elect Barack Obama counts down the days until he has to deal directly with the conflict as the leader of the free world, a war to control the message is raging at home, and it's unusually fierce. Parenthetically interjects Dave, think serpent's walk. Think media control by the underground Reich and the underground Axis. I don't talk about Japan as much, but the same sort of situation obtains there as well. This week, some jarring events made headlines and illustrated the nature of that war. Hugely popular comedian Jon Stewart, who is Jewish, birth name Jonathan Stewart Leibowitz, was lauded by the Muslim Public Affairs Council this week for a scathing Daily Show segment entitled Israel Invades Gaza, Mistletoe. The Comedy Central host, noting that rockets lobbed from Hamas into Israel are not new, posed the question, why does Israel feel that they have to react so strongly right now, unquote. Answer the Obama inauguration. Quote, I get it. Israel gets their bombing in before the January 20th hope and change deadline. It's like a civilian carnage Toyota-thon, unquote, he said to roars of approval from his audience. Well, this is not only factually wrong, but this exemplifies what is wrong with television. A very, very dear friend and one of the most wonderful people I've ever met in Southern California is a huge Daily Show fan. I am a non-TV watcher. However, I exist in this world, and I watch television. In particular, there have been a number of shared housing situations in which roommates have been serious TV watchers. I've seen a total of three Daily Shows, and I was singularly unimpressed. There was a recent story that said that college students get something like two-thirds of college students, or most college students, get most of their information or news information from The Daily Show. And I said to this very good friend, I said, that's really depressing. He said, nope, I watch The Daily Show. Well, I continue, with all due respect to that consummately wonderful human being, I've seen The Daily Show three times, and I'm really unimpressed. It does not, first of all, I don't think it's very funny. It's very snarky. It's very uninformed, very superficial, very uninforming. And this kind of exemplifies what I found objectionable about it. The timing of this particular foray was dictated by a number of things. First and foremost, yeah, there were some electoral and politics involved here, but it wasn't the Obama inauguration. It was the upcoming Israeli elections in February. One of the things that's looming large on the horizon and does not bode well for President Obama is the fact that the Likud party, the most reactionary of the major political parties in Israel, is doing very well in the polls. The Likud party standard bearer at this point is Benjamin Netanyahu, whose father, Benzion Netanyahu, was the personal secretary to Vladimir Yabotinsky, the head of the Beitar, the major fascist element within the Zionist movement. This is not to imply, by the way, that Zionism is a fascist movement. Far from it, although in the so-called progressive sector in this company, in this country, rather, Pacifica Radio, Z Magazine, and similar elements, and a lot of elements abroad, that is being represented. No, there is, however, a fascist element in the Zionist movement, and one of the things that is disturbing about the course of events in the Middle East is the fact that the more violence takes place, the more polarization takes place. And the net effect of the Hamas rocketing of portions of Israel is to give strength to the Likud, which again is the repository for most of the fascist elements within the Zionist movement. In the late 90s, for example, as discussed almost exclusively by yours truly in For the Record 94, the Likud party actually sent a representative, Udi Cohen, to the National Convention of the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian fascist party and successor to Mussolini's fascisti, who, in the concept of the virtual state that I talked about in 660, also have the closest relations with the Muslim Brotherhood, the parent organization of Hamas. But it is the Israeli elections, Mr. Stewart slash Leibowitz, that are the reason for the timing of this particular attack. And also, very interestingly, something, of course, that Leibowitz slash Stewart managed to miss, but that was the effect on Israeli public opinion of the toddler whose parents were massacred in the Mumbai massacre and who was found with his corduroy pants soaked in his parents' blood. And his parents' funeral and the kid crying out for his mommy were broadcast all over Israel. And that had a really galvanizing effect. That ticked off the Israeli public. And the fact of the matter is, Israel is a democracy. And when you have a situation like this, those candidates and that political party that will say, we will stop the rocket fire, those are the people who are going to get elected. And some actual wisdom, I think, was expressed by then candidate Barack Obama last year during the campaign when he visited one of the towns that was getting rocketed. And he said, you know, if somebody were firing rockets at my kids, I would do anything necessary to protect them. And one of the things that I've, if there's any cause for optimism, sort of the difference between the so-called progressive sector and the, at this point, consummately corrupt political intellectual elite in this country, and the snarky media pimps like Jonathan Stewart slash Leibowitz, is that in the street, most of the people I've talked to in this country, you know, the average Joes and Janes, have had pretty much the same thing. So, you know, if somebody's shooting at my kids, I'd shoot back, which is the human reaction. But with this television reality, we don't get it. I think it's really sad that a large percentage of college students are getting most of the information from this garbage comedy show. Sorry, friend in Southern California. Because the fact of the matter is, this guy is just flat out bleeping wrong. Another element, perhaps, in dictating the timing of the attack is the very low price of oil, which is weakening the abilities, at least temporarily, of Iran and also Russia to supply the weaponry and resupply Hamas, and also on Israel's other flank, Hezbollah. That also may have an element of timing here. Also, Iran is heading for elections as well, and Ahmadinejad is facing some serious challenges. So the low price of oil, but above all, the Israeli elections with Likud doing very, very well, that is what dictates this. I chanced to see, again, a total of three daily shows, didn't like them, wasn't impressed, and one of the things that I noted that in two of the three, Stewart slash Leibowitz made a comment about O.J. He said a little snarky comment about O.J., and my guess is he's as fundamentally misinformed about that as he obviously is about the Middle East, but again, television is bad. And one of the things it does, and this is a dynamic I call information versus confirmation. Again, with reading, you get the simultaneous integration of concepts. But with television, all you get is an image. Another event in the recent Middle East war was the shooting of a UN vehicle with a couple of aid workers. The accounts describe that as tank fire. The actual account of the event, the vehicle was stopped at a checkpoint and a bullet, a round killed one occupant of the vehicle. Another bullet narrowly missed another occupant and he was slightly injured by shattered glass. The account said tank fire. Well, the Israeli military, the IDF, said it was a Hamas sniper. Well, it obviously couldn't have been the main gun from the tanker. It would have disintegrated the vehicle and everybody in it. I do not know whether the machine guns mounted on Israeli armor, particularly their Merkava Bane battle tank, are capable of selective fire, meaning semi-automatic, one shot at a time, or fully auto. But I would be very surprised if that was tank fire, because they would have had to squeeze off individual rounds. I would not want to make a definitive statement unless I had seen the vehicle, which I did not, but if it had been hit with a machine gun, rounds are very inaccurate. They rely for their killing power on volume of fire and also the psychological effect of the tracer rounds that basically can cause troops to be under fire to keep their heads down and provides good cover for advancing one's own infantry against an enemy position. But again, with reading, reading permits the simultaneous integration of concepts. And in general, I would say that what we have seen coming out of the Middle East is fundamentally distorted, and it is TV distortion at that. There have been some examples of phony coverage that have actually been exposed. Due to the limitations of time, I'm not going to discuss either of these. There was a Fox News account in which France 2, a French TV, France 2 public television, the same network, by the way, that showed the Al-Dura hoax. Mohammed Al-Dura was the little Palestinian kid who was supposedly killed by IDF fire in a crossfire. Turns out that entire incident was fabricated. I'm going to have the URL for this particular article. Again, phony coverage of alleged Israeli atrocities, manufactured footage. That and also another one from another conservative website which talks about some more phony footage that has been manufactured footage that has been run by CNN. The headlines, critics of the Fox News article, critics say French TV network broadcast fabricated footage in Gaza again. And the other one is CNN busted running phony Gaza propaganda and don't fess up. Again, the URLs and excerpts for these will be in the written description for this program. But what I want to note, and again due to the limitations of time, in For the Record program number 566, Middle East Matrix, and by the way, that series of programs dealing with comparisons between the Matrix movie in which human beings are kept in a computer-generated illusory environment by malevolent and controlling machines. In For the Record 566, and I will excerpt this in the description for the program, is discussion of the Associated Press and specifically in the market dynamics of Associated Press television news, which for economic reasons is heavily skewed toward pleasing the growing Arab market and the markets in countries that produce petroleum. And the Associated Press has been deeply involved with it would be difficult to exaggerate the AP's influence in the coverage of this recent Middle East conflict. Again, For the Record 566 takes a good long look at Associated Press television news and the market dynamics that lead to the fundamental skewing of television coverage of the Middle Eastern conflicts. But the AP is of it, and its performance in the recent Gaza conflict is very interesting indeed. It'd be an exaggeration, but not too much of an exaggeration, to describe the AP as basically the main purveyor of information about the recent Gaza conflict. And one individual in particular, his byline has been on the vast bulk of AP stories carried on the internet, carried in daily papers. And that is a guy named Ibrahim Barzakh. Now, who is Ibrahim Barzakh? Probably a website called The Ledger has the following, and this is by Ibrahim Barzakh of the Associated Press, Thursday, January 8th. News reporter finds his Gaza home in ruins. Editor's note, Ibrahim Barzakh, AP's chief correspondent in Gaza City for 17 years and a lifelong resident of the enclave, has lived through Israel's offensive that began December 27th. Here he recounts what has happened to some of the personnel and public landmarks of his life. And skipping down, 3 days after Israel began its airstrikes against Hamas militants on December 27th, my apartment building was shaken by bombs aimed at a nearby Hamas-run government compound. The point being that the AP's main person covering this war is basically the Palestinian, and as such really cannot be expected to be too objective. But again, the role of the AP in this is very significant, and do note what I talked about in For the Record 566. A reporter from the Corriere della Sera was able to penetrate the Middle Eastern matrix and came out with, and by the way, the Corriere della Sera is Italy's main daily, came out with an article titled Report, Hamas Faked Casualty Figures and Hospital Occupancy Rate in Gaza. I'm going to put the URL and in the supplemental section a the original article, the Google translation, which is problematic up to a point, and also a better coverage of this in the Israel National News. But what this reporter basically found was that the casualty figures, surprise, surprise, were being faked. The reporter, by the way, is Lorenzo Cremonesi, and on January 22nd of 2009, he published an article that said it could be like in Jenin in 2002. Initially, we spoke of 1,500 deaths. Then it came out that there were only 54, including at least 45 guerrillas who died fighting. Doubts about the number of victims, parenthetically, in the Gaza fighting could be as many as few as 600 and not 1,300, and an awful lot of them, according to this report, were men aged 17 to 23. The article goes on to describe not only deliberate distortions by Hamas, but elements in which Hamas, or incidents, I should say, in which Hamas basically held Palestinian residents of Gaza prisoner in order to provoke casualties. Basically, when they started hiding, Hamas, that is, started hiding fighters in people's homes, people objected. They said, get out of here. One of the things that has not received a lot of coverage is before the Israelis struck a particular neighborhood, they would leaflet the area and basically tell people to get the hell out of there. And that's something we don't hear enough about. But because of that, when Hamas began stationing fighters in the homes of civilians, thereby inevitably drawing fire. And when the civilians objected, they were told they were traitors and they should shut up because they would certainly be martyred if they were killed by the Israelis, which wasn't particularly pleasing to them. An article in the New York Times, however, of January 10th of 2009, Egyptians seethe over Gaza and their leaders feel heat, talks about the effect of this distorted coverage on the Arab street. We don't know exactly how many deaths there were. The available evidence suggests that there has been considerable distortion, not to mention the deliberate provoking of fire onto civilian areas to produce, quote, atrocities, unquote. By the way, I would note that stationing combatants in arms in civilian areas is itself a war crime. But the fact of the matter is that in the Arab street, this is being very, very poorly received. In this article by Michael Slackman in the New York Times of 1-10-09, Egyptians seethe over Gaza and their leaders feel heat. The mood on the streets of Cairo feels somber, dark, and dejected. There is a heavy security presence. Armed riot police officers are massed outside of professional organizations like the Doctors Syndicate that are often run by members aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood. The officially outlawed but tolerated Islamic movement, and again, the Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization, is gaining in popularity in the Muslim world from this. That is the Serpent's Walk scenario. Skipping down, the Muslim Brotherhood's work gives them credibility, said Heba Omar, 27, who collected about $4,000 from her neighbors to donate to a charity controlled by Brotherhood members. I would also note that in addition to inflaming the Arab street, yea, verily, as we're speaking, the French are giving the Egyptians nuclear power, and the Bush administration, one of the things it did in the last year was to agree to share, quote, peaceful, unquote, nuclear technology with Saudi Arabia. The upshot, folks, is that Serpent's Walk ends with a nuclear war in the Middle East. Israel gets wiped out. Everybody says good riddance. And that is basically what is taking place. And the reason I'm going into the distortion of this is because the media are setting the tone. Due to the limitations of time, I'm not going to go into the OJ case, but I did a program, and this will be referenced in the printed description for this program, that compares some of the points of distortion with the OJ case and with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because both have been fundamentally misrepresented and both are a real drag to talk about. Also, in the printed description to this program, I'm going to talk about yet another element in this Machiavellian scenario, and that is Bormann Jews in Israel and elsewhere. In addition to the fascist element in the Likud party, this consummately Machiavellian element can be used to further polarize Israeli public opinion, which then in turn can be used to light the match to what ultimately takes place in Serpent's Walk, which is the final solution to the Jewish problem, unquote, as the Nazis put it, wiping Israel out. And that's what's basically going to take place, barring a sea change. However, that concludes For the Record program number 661, Walking the Snake in the Middle East, Part 2, O.J. Agonistes and Palestinian Pornography, and the printed description for this program will be essential for understanding it. That concludes this broadcast. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.